With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back, to the Indie Football Podcast, new season edition, episode 2. The Premier League is back, and of course, with the Premier League back, it means we've brought an all-star cast back into the studio, a proper studio, rather than what we've been recording in all summer, I should add. And so alongside me, may I say first of all, welcome to Miguel Delaney.
Thank you.
It's an audio medium, you can't just nod at me, you have to say something as well.
I mean, when you're welcoming, I was wondering, should I say thank you or hello? Or
both. It's always nice to be grateful. Jonathan Liu.
Hi, how's it going? I really like the fact that Miguel is so committed to football, loves football so much that he is literally holding a football.
Which he's now passing hand to hand. Again, great on an audio medium to have that. An EFL one as well, because you're incredibly pretty invested in the Football League.
When did you last go to a EFL game, Miguel?
2013?
No, that's not true.
Was EFL.
Championship playoff final, surely.
Regular season.
That doesn't really
count,
though.
No, it doesn't count.
Yeah, regular season game, I think 2013, 2014, wow. I'd say.
I don't know why you'd want to advertise that.
Well, like, I mean, why would I be going?
Hollows out your already paper-thin credentials.
Anyone can look at my Twitter if they want to go through like 4 years of tweets, but I wouldn't advise it.
About 400,000
tweets. Or match reports. Why would I be sending... I go to like 80 games a season. Why would I go down to, you know...
Interesting stories. Something a bit different. Interesting stories.
Well, that do not traffic.
As you've already heard, Jack Pitbrook is here, Jack, so he didn't get a proper welcome. Had to get the dig in on Miguel first.
Yeah.
And I guess we should start where you two were yesterday, which was the Emirates Stadium for the beginning of the new era, TM, but also the continuation of the pre-existing Guardiola era of dominance. Arsenal against Manchester City. Who would like to begin with this one?
City are good.
Yeah, okay, so that's virtually all that needs saying on City, really.
Yeah.
There wasn't too much that was different from last year. They were dominant, they were good. Arsenal with a story that everyone was kind of interested in. What do they look like under Unai Emery? And in a word, Jack, what did they look like under Emery?
It's actually quite difficult to do in one word.
I would say I thought they looked
similar,
frenetic. I thought
there's still a lot of Wenger era flaws there, latter Wenger era flaws there. Particularly like, I mean, both of the goals are a joke, to be honest.
Yeah, I think the word I'd probably choose is faltering. Like, I mean, I think they had. It's so hard to judge a team, and unfair to judge a team based on the first game their manager's had, like. You know, these things, it's going to take a very long time for Emery to get his point across those players.
That's true, but you do have to still make, you can still break it down. I had a swathe of angry people telling me that it was only one game in response to all three pieces I wrote this weekend. And it's like, I'm fully aware it's one game so far. Okay. It's literally the start of the season. Okay.
That being said, I mean, I thought they were pretty bad. Like, they defended badly. It was really easy for City to get through. Like, with a bit more precision in the final third, City would have scored 3 or 4. Arsenal didn't really create anything. Like, Bellerin had that one chance. Bellerin and Lacazette had sort of half chances. But for the most part, they were kind of just hoofing it up to try and get Aubameyang in behind. So there wasn't much of a kind of clear pattern. And I think the team looked a bit unbalanced because they were playing this 4-2-3-1 where they had the front four of Ramsey, Ozil, Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang kind of playing through the middle. So they had no width, really. It didn't really look like the team was that well.
They haven't got much width in the squad.
No, they got pace. Well, as has been pointed out before, I think this shows an issue at Arsenal that their four best paid players in the squad all play in two positions, and something gave there yesterday with the fact Lacazette didn't start. Mkhitaryan, it seems they don't fully know how to use him yet. But I think you can give Emery himself a pass for a lot of that, but not all of it, because what he's most famous for is defensive rigor and drilling and order, and we didn't really see any of that on Sunday. And I don't think that's completely down to just how good City were, because even City weren't completely on it. But the first goal, Bellerin and Guendouzi just looking at Sterling. Then the second one, like the amount of space that Silva had just to lash it into the corner as he saw fit.
And City could have scored more. It was one of those. Also, I appreciate that Emery probably. I wonder if there was a bit of a mixed message thing, because how a team plays every week is obviously going to be very different to how you want to set up against Manchester City.
Yeah, that's true.
And it should be different to how you set up against Manchester City, because they are a unique team to play against. So I get the impression that Emery's wanted to play the ball out from the back and all that sort of thing. I think that was very much like a thing that he's probably been drilling into them all summer. But against Manchester City, the teams that often have the most success against Guardiola teams are teams that can get it forward quickly and kind of catch them out. So I did feel there was a little bit of a kind of a mix between short-term objectives and long-term objectives that was muddled thinking. And I guess muddled was a lot of the stuff we saw. We saw some new players. What did we think of the new additions to Arsenal? Sokratis Papastathopoulos.
So he gave away a free kick on the edge of the box.
Yellow card,
booked, where he just looked a bit slow on the turn. It's kind of quite hard to judge him in isolation. I think he'll probably be a good signing. He's like a sort of... I think all their defenders will basically look better this year.
Yeah, I agree.
With the benefit of a proper manager, like a proper defensive coach. I think he'll be fine. And then
Matteo Guendouzi.
He made a mistake early on, but I thought generally was impressive overall. Like, he always wanted the ball.
Yeah, never hit.
That's the most important thing for a midfielder, I guess, making his Premier League debut.
To be fair to him as well, I mean, after his first touch of the game, was he miscontrolled it so badly and went there for a throw-in. But for that to be happening to him at 19, and yet within 20 minutes he's still kind of in the middle of that City midfield, taking his time, picking out, I think, what was probably Arsenal's best pass of the game, a ball up to Aubameyang, and that is you can see then why Emery picked him. In fact, there's an argument he's actually Arsenal's best performer.
Though ahead of Torreira was a slightly confusing one for me. I don't know if that's just to do with preparation, but
I think ideally they play Guendouzi and Torreira.
Yeah,
because I think Guendouzi's actually more of a... He's not a Xhaka type player because he looks quite good, but he's someone who passes the ball forward quickly. So I think ideally, if you're going to play 4-2-3-1, you'd play Torreira as the kind of tackler and Guendouzi as the passer. So that way you get a better balance, and you don't have to play Granit Xhaka.
Does that mean you're taking it? You're dropping Xhaka?
With a heavy heart, yes.
The other question is: someone put to me on Twitter yesterday during the game, Andy Mullins, what does Xhaka actually do that's good? Other than provoke ludicrously defensive reactions to Arsenal fans.
He can hit
that's
a ball
not good,
hard.
Actually. He can hit a ball hard. Yeah, yeah.
And when it comes to it, at the World Cup, a big celebration and a big moment.
Just gesture to Johnny there, whether he thinks...
Johnny's not interested in Granit Xhaka.
The thing is, we're sort of moving into an era where even the most defensive of defensive midfielders need to be so exceptional on the ball, because the level of pressing in that area of the pitch is just so high, and it's arguably what did for Wilshere in the end. It's arguably what may eventually do for Xhaka. And Arsenal have had so many really quite bad players in that position. Coquelin.
Xhaka isn't as bad as Coquelin.
No, Xhaka isn't as bad as Coquelin, and he's better on the ball. But the age of having a sort of limited player in that position is kind of gone.
What do we think about the goalkeeping situation? Peter Cech with a couple of ropey moments. One okay save from an Aguero effort, which I think was more Aguero's fault. That weird pass, but they've got £22 million worth of goalkeeper on the bench.
It feels like that situation like at Spurs in 2012, where we all know what's going to happen, but the manager doesn't yet have the bottle, basically, to kind of just make that strong decision, even though he actually has a free pass to make it, really.
And one of them's going to play Europa League anyway, you guess, right?
Yeah. I think Miguel's right. I think it will be a slow transition from Cech to Leno over the course of the season. We were discussing this at halftime yesterday, and about that kind of Friedel-Lloris situation in 2012. But I remember going into the 2010-11 season, Mancini for City decided that Joe Hart, after that good loan season at Birmingham, would be his goalkeeper. And on the first day of the season, it was Hart instead of Shay Given, and they never looked back.
Yeah, and of course Guardiola did the same to Hart.
Yeah, I don't see what you actually gain by doing this gradually rather than clinically. Yeah.
Same thing happened to Cech at Chelsea when Courtois.
Of course, yeah.
So I think we will see some changes there. And I think, it's Emery's first game, so we're all looking for things, what's going to be different, what's going to be the same. But really, a team against Manchester City is not the best way to judge them, because we're going to have to see how they are. I mean, you've got Chelsea on Saturday at Stamford Bridge. So it's probably not really until the week after when they play West Ham, I think.
But that, I think that Chelsea game could be, I mean, not. It's not going to be both teams at the highest because it's so early in the manager's spells. But that's actually going to make it, I think, quite an entertaining game and quite a, and a, sorry to use this word, but interesting game because it's two teams that don't really know themselves yet.
Yeah.
So
I'm 3 points are a bonus almost.
I'm away this weekend and I'm actually sorry to be missing it.
Me too.
Just on that point, you know, sort of first weekend of the season, if you do a little Twitter search for the quote string, only one game but, you'll see some incredibly outlandish opinions.
Right. You should save them all now for the end of the season.
Well, exactly. Only one game, but I fear for us. Honestly, I fear for us. Or only one game. I don't think Cardiff will get 10 points this season. It's almost like a free pass. Yeah. I'm not racist, but. Yeah.
Well, also, think about the first game of the season. It kind of provokes similar reactions. You know, basically, when a team gets into a spell mid-season and they like lose three games in a row, and you're kind of almost thinking to yourself, that's them done, they're never winning a game again.
How many times did we say that on the podcast? Yeah. I think Huddersfield are down now. Huddersfield are gone.
You can't even envisage the idea of them like getting a point. Yeah.
And there's like 16 games left.
That's them gone.
Yeah, yeah.
370 games left in the Premier League season.
Yeah,
it's a scary thought.
And we're going to be at pretty much all of them. The second game we should probably talk about is the team that are top of the Premier League, the champions elect, if you will, Liverpool, who beat West Ham 4-0. They were very good. West Ham were not, but again, you know, it's difficult to know in a vacuum how bad West Ham were.
I thought that was very predictable what was going
to
happen.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone was surprised. Yeah. We got our first look at Naby Keita, who Liverpool have obviously been waiting a year for. I don't know how much you saw that. This was before the Arsenal game, right? So you must have been at the Emirates watching it.
I got to the Emirates and kind of how it was on in the background, basically. And oh, look, there's a goal.
Okay. I was watching it moderately.
I watched Match of the Day too, though.
And I think it kind of confirmed what we thought about Liverpool, that they should be the second best team. But do we think they're going to be closer to third or closer to first?
Closer to first.
I think it might actually be quite a tight title race.
Yeah,
especially because he seems to have something on City. You know, they've beaten City a couple of times. That's significant.
There is a belief about Liverpool as well. I mean, and that, I think that is important going into these sort of seasons.
I'm not saying that City don't have, you know, the same hunger that they did last season, because, you know, patently with Pep in charge, that's not going to be true. But Liverpool have really been gunning for this season for quite a while. Last season was not a free pass, but it felt like, you know, a building block on the way to this season.
Yeah.
Especially in the way they bought Van Dijk in January. They bought Keita, you know, a year in advance. And not to sound like, you know, somebody on the Anfield rap or something, but this is our time. This is their year.
I think that they've bought players who fit in as kind of final piece in the jigsaw sorts. You know what I mean? Like if you go out and... I guess the last few big players they've signed essentially are big money... It's definitely starting every week sort of players. And they've got a little bit of depth in Shaqiri, which I think is good value. But
I haven't quite seen... I was thinking about this. You don't see it that overt, really, these days. I mean, it seems like a big club, they'll buy one or two massive signings, but then kind of, you know, filling gaps here and there, like filling gaps in the squad rather than the first 11. Whereas this felt like the kind of most forensic summer a Premier League team has had, basically since Chelsea 2014, when Mourinho just went out and signed Fabregas, Costa and brought Courtois back, and that was kind of like...
Okay. For some reason, I thought you meant Chelsea 04 when they signed Damien Duff, Glenn Johnson, and all those lads. 03.
It's always a sign, isn't it, of like a team which is super serious, that they're signing a small number of high quality players to specific roles.
Yeah.
And when they didn't get Keita last year, you know, they didn't go to Klopp and go, well, who else do you want? Do you want Danny Drinkwater?
Yeah.
do you want Wilfred Ndidi?
No, and that's what a lot of big clubs do, isn't it?
Yeah. Get me a body in. Get me a body in.
I think Keita's going to be very, very good. You know, it's not a surprise to anyone. Like, he's been built up as one of these players, and you talk to people who are in recruitment and stuff, and they think he could be one of the best players in the world, and he just seems to have everything. He can tackle, he can press, he can pass, he can shoot, he can dribble. His kind of outside of the boot, perfectly weighted pass in the build-up to the first goal was excellent. Sadio Mane was great. Firmino... Salah scored again. Like, it was just Liverpool from last season. It was just a continuation, which...
But better.
Considering how they played in the second half of last year, is exactly what they'd want, I guess. So, anything else you want to say on Liverpool?
I didn't really watch that.
Okay, West Ham. My main thing was there was a beautiful moment. I really wasn't ready for football to start again this weekend. It's come a bit soon.
Yeah, that's true.
But there was a beautiful 10-second period where the ball got smashed into the groin of Mark Noble and Jack Wilshere within a very short period. And it was incredibly enjoyable. And it really finally got me going for the new season.
That's a spell of rich in symbolism, really.
They're both reeling afterwards, like lying on the floor. The ref stopped the play because he thought it was a head injury. No jokes. I knew you'd try it. And and then the replay is unbelievable because you get two slow motion efforts in a way, and you get two facial expressions as well.
That game was always going to be an absolute massacre, wasn't it? There was never any prospect. Like
West Ham's defense.
West Ham don't have many good defensive players, and they've got a manager who is like wants his teams to play open, expansive, proactive football, and is not really a guy to kind of like march the players around the training ground to perfect their positioning against. Not even playing against the opposition.
Not that Moisey is a better manager than Pellegrini, but he probably would have been a better
game.
Masuaku certainly could have benefited from some of Moyes' experience. Which one do you want to do next? Manchester United 2, Leicester 1 was the season opener.
More generally, I was thinking it was a opening weekend that was extremely predictable. All the results, bar maybe Fulham and Palace, only for the fact that there was so much hype about Fulham and because they were at home. But at the end of the day, they're still a promoted club, Palace and established.
Watford beating Brighton 2-0?
No.
I mean, I don't know. I'm quite...
Tumbleweed.
I think Brighton have bought incredibly well this summer. I think Brighton have got a lot of good players.
And the best of luck to them.
Yeah. But, no, okay. I think you're probably right. And you know, we said... Who do you say in your predictions were the most boring team in the league?
Bournemouth. They actually wouldn't have gotten any good luck.
Beat Cardiff 2-0. Southampton 0, Burnley 0 was the game I'm glad I avoided.
That was probably the most predictable. A team that can score, and with the greatest respect to him, signed Danny Ings against Burnley away from home. Should have put a lot of money
Ings
on nil.
Right.
Ings is good, but he's still kind of... He's kind of one of those forwards you still feel, he'll give you a lot. He'll work hard for you. At this point in his career, rather
9 goals from 36 games.
Yeah,
and he also missed 2 whole years for the injuries.
Exactly. Yeah,
like, I wonder how much better do we think he is than Shane Long?
Shane Long is your ultimate 9 goals in 36 games.
Well, I mean, he's certainly better than Shane Long has been for the last couple of years. I mean, he looked quite shocked.
Surely Shane Long's been better than Danny Ings the last couple of years, because Danny Ings hasn't played last couple of years.
Ings now, or you know, Ings potentially this season has you know the. Can do a lot better than Shane Long has done.
Ings's peak was probably higher than Long's peak, but I think Ings has been robbed of 2 prime years, basically, that he's never obviously going to get back to that level. I would maybe marginally rather have Shane Long because he looks like Roadrunner.
Do you not reckon Ings can only get better?
Manchester United 2, Leicester 1. Paul Pogba... Paul Pogba scored and Man United won against Leicester. Even though Leicester were probably, is it fair to say they were a better side or not?
We had a staff drinks that night, so
I watched the entire game. I watched the entire game back, waiting for someone to come back from the airport. And Man United played in black shorts, which I have to say we don't approve of at the Indie Football Podcast.
Black shorts and red socks.
Yeah, no, it's not right. It's not right at all. And they weren't amazing. Obviously they've got players coming back late, etc. But this Mourinho-Pogba thing kind of continued out of it. And then Pogba told the Sunday papers. So you kind of have to go out your way to talk to the Sunday papers after a Friday night. But Pogba managed to find the chaps up there and said that he couldn't possibly say how he felt about things because he'd get fined. So what do you make of the row that's not, I don't know if it's brewing or if it's simmering, but it's certainly ongoing at Manchester United.
The first thing that strikes me, surely he's earned enough money to take the fine. You know, show with a bottle, Paul lad.
So you're saying he should have come out and just said it?
Well, I mean, this is almost worse. Like, it's just the continuation of this sort of cold war. It's But yeah, he's clear. He's implicitly admitting that there is an issue there.
And we don't think, obviously, for a second that United would sanction his departure this summer. But it does have everything set up for a sort of classic Barcelona campaign, a year-long
thing where he ends up last week,
where he ends up wearing a or liking a Barcelona tweet or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, the sustained campaign. Obviously, Mino Raiola loves getting involved in these things. If you are Ed Woodward, Jack, now put yourself in those shoes for a second.
Okay.
What do you do next?
Like, start ringing around to figure out who your next manager is going to be? Like, you can't start Mourinho now because it would just be like a catastrophe. But equally, you've got it. Like, this is only heading one way, right? Like, and you need...
And it's not at the top of the table.
No. And you have to start thinking that. That's why Woodward, I think, was right to not sign hundreds of millions of pounds worth of 30-year-olds this summer at the behest of Mourinho.
He was right, but the only thing is that it basically just furthers us along to makes what we all think is going to happen increasingly inevitable. Because, I mean, I think there is a fair counter argument. If he's in the job, back him. Like,
I kind of disagree with that because I think that there are going to be situations where the two's interests are not aligned. And in that, just because Mourinho is in the job doesn't mean you have to back him.
But, I mean, ultimately, then it just opens the situation. And what is the point? Like, we know how Mourinho works.
But Mourinho's always going to find... Mourinho's always going to find a reason to, like, act like he does.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Woodward should be thinking, oh, fuck, if I do this, he's going to be upset. If I do that, he's going to be upset. I think
not even about making him upset, but more so, basically... If this is the manager in the job right now, and if you're not going to sack him right now, because with the corollary of that being that you have to have enough faith in what he's doing, let him do the job as he sees it. Now, again, there are wider arguments over whether Mourinho will be completely happy with any sort of signing. I mean, I remember hearing stories in the summer about how Mourinho would basically, he would mention, for all his talk of giving five names to the board, he would mention three centre halves, but never really specify which one, and then kind of find issue with like anyone they went for.
Sounds like my ex-girlfriend.
The analogy here isn't perfect, but if there's any lesson that we can take from history, it's that you can't appease authoritarians because they will just come back wanting more. And it's the conflict is so innate to his nature that, you buy him five players and he'll complain about five more.
Mm.
And it's especially given the tension within the club at the moment, you can't just give him what he wants, right?
It's always been a crucial part of his armory, really, hasn't it?
What's the point, though, then? Right. What is the point?
Well, exactly. So this point is coming to a head.
The point is, make this into a transition season to a better setup next year with a more appropriate manager, and hope that it doesn't go fully Chelsea 2015-16.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Pogba is 10 times more important to United as
it's
a
true,
club
yeah.
And a brand.
In every way.
You know, and as a team, than Mourinho is.
And do you not think, Man United have bought expensive old blokes on short-term sort of things. Van Persie springs to mind before.
But
give you a chance of winning a trophy that year.
Yeah.
Now, if United...
Well, one or two is okay. And Ferguson always kind of struck a balance there.
No doubt. And I don't think, obviously, you can compare the situation they're in now to the situation when they bought Van Persie. But I think the most obvious thing is that they're trying to hire a director of football now, a sporting director, to basically put another layer of management in between Woodward and the coach, depending on who the coach is, and ideally they'd be there longer term, steering the football direction of Manchester United, rather than having someone who doesn't necessarily have a football background to do that. That, to me, seems like a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Capital G, capital I. Going forward, though, what do we think on Mourinho? Like, he started the season in such sour form. As you say, Johnny, his like combat is actually a key weapon of his, and it's having less and less of an impact as we go on. Do we think that he can just turn this around with a few wins and he might try and be the happy Jose act, which we've seen before? Or do we think that this definitely is, we're on the downward slope now, and at the bottom of the hill, it ends up with Jose leaving and in a couple of years being Portugal manager?
Well, the bottom line is, I don't think United are capable of winning the title this season. And the line below the bottom line is that Mourinho probably knows that. And as we know, when Mourinho gets to a certain stage at the club, he starts thinking about how is this going to be perceived.
Yeah, that's yeah.
He starts thinking about his exit strategy, and he thinks about
a lot of this summer was about as well.
Well, exactly. You know, there may have been a point earlier in the summer, or even earlier, maybe sort of some point during last season when City were just running away with it, where he thinks, I'm not going to get out of here with a Premier League title. How can I spin this? How can I sell this to my next employer, to my legacy? As some sort of great victory. Well, you know, I was hamstrung by, you know, not getting the players I wanted. And so you come up with that outrageous demand in the summer that are essentially going to facilitate that. And, you know, certain bald journalists in the media are going to ring your bell for you.
Do you think he's got a free pass now? Because they haven't got the signings he wanted. Basically, if things go well until Christmas, then it looks like it's all his work. And if things go badly, then he can point to the non-arrivals and say, look, told you so, we needed these.
I still think he should be doing better at what he's got. We kind of discussed this last week, how that squad is set up. Even the defence, while it did need more recruitment, I actually think it's better than Mourinho's mood, have you let on. In saying all that, I actually don't think they'll quite dip into disaster or 2015-16 this season. I think they'll very tediously grind their way to third or fourth.
And he's very skillfully engineered a position where that actually looks like...
I know, yeah,
success,
yeah.
Overachievement.
Yeah, yeah, which is nonsense.
A tedious grind to third for the biggest club in the world.
Somehow managed to drag the most expensive squad of all time into fourth place in the Premier League.
Bravo to him, bravo.
What a magician.
Miguel and I were talking about this the other day. Is this Manchester United team the worst team ever to have like five world-class players and pretty good players in every other position?
maybe Real Madrid around 2005. We were kind of running it.
Yeah, well, Francisco Pavon and Albert Saladis are in there. But no, you're probably right. Any final thoughts on Manchester United before we move on from the dreary tedium of a third-place team?
This would have been the time to mention the kits.
Oh, yes, yeah, sorry. No, the kits. We need the kits up front before the Cold War that's ripping the club apart. Wolves 2, Everton 2. Wolves got a late equaliser here.
That was top class Barclays. Great, very enjoyable game.
Like really, like pissing down rain, end to end. Like
four goals.
Also, Wolves. You know, Wolves are really up for it. Like bang up for it. And their fans have certainly had a bit of a swagger in the off season because they're convinced that they're about to do some great things before the experiment implodes. But they basically got a late equaliser, which prevented a clean sweep of the newly promoted sides. After a kind of pre-season where everyone was very optimistic about all of the newly promoted clubs, they did get it. I mean, it was a dodgy red card, really, that gave them...
No, that's a red card.
You thought it was red,
that's
did
a red
you?
Card, yeah. It's a clear goal-scoring opportunity, and it's a bad tackle, and he's the last man.
I mean, I have to be honest, I only saw it when they're analysing it at half-time, and I didn't realise it was the last man. But they were talking about excessive force.
Was it given for...
BT was talking about excessive force, yeah.
Sorry?
Dogso? Denial of a goal scoring opportunity?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what it was given for?
Yeah, it's a heavy touch. It's not a red card tackle. You know, his studs are sort of... You know, he's reaching for it, basically. And is it Jota?
Yeah.
It was Jota. Yeah. If he gets the ball, he's through. He's through on goal, and that happens about 25 yards out. If he gets the ball, you know, he's 15 yards out, and he's got a shot on goal. So, yes.
BT were flashing out the rules for excessive force.
Wasn't that correct at a half time, I think, or something?
I'm not sure. I've got to be honest. I was watching that post Fulham Palace on the TVs, and it was a very, as you say, very entertaining game, pelting with rain, end to end. Richarlison doing stuff. You know,
big fan of Ruben or the aesthetics of Ruben Neves's deliveries, especially that cross.
I love like a wonderful kind shape, of like height and dip.
Yeah.
The way he gets the kind of up and down.
Could Pickford have done better for the free kick goal? Your keeper shouldn't be beaten on that side.
What does David Priest think?
I don't. It showed that on the eye paper today. I think he's got a column on that. I think. I mean, it looked to me like if you're leaving that side of the goal, if you leave that side of the goal and you're on the left to start off with, you have to cover the left-hand side. That's kind of how it works. But anyway, Fulham nil, Palace 2. Fulham were good. Fulham were really good. I thought they, considering they had 6 new signings, they looked just like the Fulham of last season, which is an achievement in itself and testament to Jokanovic's work. They just, like we said, they might be short on goals. They didn't create many chances, and Palace are just a good counter-attacking team. That's exactly how they're built. They're not built. They couldn't dominate a game if they tried, I don't think, Palace.
Has it made you more optimistic about Palace staying up?
Well, it's 3 points on the way to... Well, you probably need 36 or 37. So it's certainly a better start than last year. Wan-Bissaka was really good. I mean, that's one to watch. Him against Sessegnon was a good battle because it's two young English players that you think could be something. Yeah. And Sessegnon was so quiet. Seri looks interesting. He doesn't have like the attacking drive that you might want, but maybe it's going to come. But his range of passing and stuff was pretty impressive. Le Marchand was good in central defence as well.
Of the 8 players that played the most passes over the weekend, 4 of them were from Fulham.
Is that right? Who were they?
Seri, Kenny,
McDonald,
Le Crusade. Who's
Le Marchand? Yeah, Le Marchand.
Le Crusade.
The Crusade.
It's a French name.
The other midfielder was in McCarthy.
McDonald. Yeah. No, Le Marchand looked good. Him and Chambers didn't communicate that well, but obviously they're all new signings and stuff. Their new keeper will not be long for this league. Sergio Rico, I think, will replace Fabbri, who made like 3 terrible mistakes and was kind of at fault for Palace's second goal, scored by Wilfried Zaha. Southampton 0, Burnley 0, we've discussed. Watford 2, Brighton 0. Huddersfield 0, Chelsea 3. Maurizio Sarri getting off to a good start.
Did we really see... It feels like almost a bit of a freebie for Sarri, that, because Huddersfield are still a championship team.
Yeah.
And I wish I could offer anything useful on this. I've only seen the highlights, really good penalties.
The big thing
to come
out of this game for me, from a sort of tactical aspect, is Maurizio Sarri eating cigarettes.
Yeah, yeah.
to get around like the obvious smoking ban.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which I imagine would be disgusting.
Rotten.
What? So hang on, how does that get around the? So he ate it. He literally ate
it. It was kind of like
it
looked like he had a cigarette like kind of lodged in his mouth, like facing the wrong way.
Yeah, yeah. The butt sticking out of.
Where does he get one of those snooze things?
I don't know. But it. So that picture was quite widely publicised. Well, he didn't want to speak about it, I think, afterwards.
I read that Chelsea are trying to get a smoking room installed at Stamford Bridge for him.
Really?
Which
presumably that would have
contravenes all rules,
kind of,
I guess.
Legal loophole.
Conte wouldn't have been up for that at all.
Like, this is, you know, oh no, this isn't like the store cupboard. This is Mauricio's house. I don't know how they do it, but
One thing I was thinking out of the game.
Go on.
How often? Or for how much longer can Jorginho get away with that penalty? That feels like it has a finite... I mean, because...
You don't use it every time. You can't use it every time.
Yeah. All it takes is one goalkeeper. I mean, or has he prepared for a goalkeeper standing up and he just smashes it?
It's just... it's just the sign of a very confident player who's technically very gifted, I think. I mean...
It's game theory, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it is.
A goalkeeper will not just stand up. Because it's so much worse than if you dive the wrong way, that's fine. If you stand there and the penalty gets buried into the far corner, or not even the corner, you look like an idiot.
But I think keepers have to start forgetting it. I think it's with the way penalties are going, it makes sense for keepers
to
stand.
The keeper's job is not to like avoid looking humiliated. Mm. The keeper's job is to like maximize his chance of saving it, and that means taking the risk on being made like a lemon by sometimes standing there on the off chance you'll catch them off guard.
Yeah. Well, this is like to move into Ed's wheelhouse. This is like going for it on fourth down, which the stats say you should do within like 3 or 4, maybe it's 7 yards. If you're like fourth and 7, the stats say go for it. But And in a perfect world, that would happen. But because perception, the public perception, is not perfect, and general managers and, you know, managers and fans are not, you know, they react to things in a slightly imperfect way, it's not, it's easier said than done.
Right,
you
know? Yeah.
And people lose jobs, and, you know, it comes down to that sort of thing. If there's a keeper, for example, Peter Cech, who's scared about losing his place to the £22 million guy on the bench, he's never staying down the middle. A confident guy who's just had the understudy sold and they've just promoted a kid from the academy might be able to do it. You know, everything comes within its own context. But I do agree that how many... I think we see very few penalties go in the corners these days. So the thought of, like, that you're going to dive at, you're gonna have to dive at full stretch to one side is kind of not really a thing.
Yeah. It's like the argument with what's the best way of defending a corner, zonal or man marking? And when people rely, when people justify man marking on the basis that
accountability,
it allows you to apportion blame correctly, they're making a category error.
Like, yeah.
That isn't what you should be looking for in how you choose the system, right? It should be the one which works best.
I've never seen a zone score a goal.
Yeah. So I've never seen a stat score a goal. My classic Paul Lambertism.
I think keepers get coached as well to not to dive too far in a way. So if it goes straight down the middle, they've still got a chance.
Forwards as well, like in the World Cup against Spain.
Well, after all the game theory chat, we've probably exhausted today's thing. I don't think I've got anything else. Do you have any more things you'd like to talk about?
We should go back to Man City. I think we skirted over the issue.
It's a new team.
Man City.
It's a new
like,
team.
Because the thing is, yeah, they're still good, but they also didn't have their two best players, David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne, playing. Or certainly the two most important players to how good they were last season.
Stones and Laporte is...
Yeah, so Stones and Laporte is different.
One thing I was very impressed with yesterday... Now, this might be down to Arsenal not being slick enough to pull it off yet, but still, Arsenal, as you said earlier, they kept going for that one attack, knocking along, trying. And it's previously been a bit of a Guardiola glass jaw, the high line, leaves it susceptible to kind of quick balls over. Yet, particularly Stones and Laporte, but also Walker, were very, very attuned to that.
Laporte's quicker than Otamendi, that's why. Otamendi's really slow. And when City struggled last season, like not least in their all four games against Liverpool, actually, it was with Salah attacking Otamendi on the outside, whereas Laporte, who plays in that kind of left centre-back position, is just stronger. And there were a few times where it looked like Aubameyang was trying to get away from him, but Laporte was actually quick enough to go and get back.
Made a couple of good last-ditch tackles.
So that will be a big difference. So I think Laporte basically gives you two big advantages over Otamendi. One is that pace, and two is he's much better with the ball at his feet. Like him and Stones set quite a lot of attacks off yesterday with their passing. And I think that given that City are concerned that they're going to have to pick out, they're going to have to find their way around teams who are like defending deep, 5-4-1, with like the one opposition striker, like Fernandinho, which is what Guardiola talked about on the Premier League launch day. Like the ability of Stones and Laporte to pass their way through the opposition is going to be a really important part.
But on that then, I mean, we're possibly getting ahead of ourselves here because we'll be discussing this more in 3 to 5 weeks, but should City win the Champions League this year?
Well, yes, in the sense that they are the best team in Europe.
Yeah, that's right.
They were the best team in Europe last year.
Well, I think last year you would have given them a bit more, in terms of style, just because of the fact they hadn't yet won the title under Pep. They were still they were still kind of coming to this peak, whereas now I think they're definitively the best side in the continent. I'd say actually by distance, to be honest.
Well, because their main contenders have got weaker as well. That's the other thing. I think they've got better. I think it's fair to say they've got better, right? Yeah. But Real Madrid and Barca are both weaker.
Yeah.
They also didn't... The reason they didn't win it last year is that they were unlucky enough to draw the only team in the quarterfinals who could beat them.
Yeah, that's probably... I'd have fancied them against Real.
I'd fancy City against anyone, but still not Liverpool.
Yeah.
I think City could beat anyone in Europe, but maybe not Liverpool. Mm-hmm.
I think Atletico Madrid would give them a good one.
That would be an interesting game.
Yeah.
I'd give City like maybe 15-20% chance of winning the Champions League, which actually would make them strong favourites.
Yeah,
yeah.
But that's as big as you can get. I mean, it's just a very, very difficult competition to win.
Well, yeah.
At the end of the day,
and I suppose this is the thing, mate. Oh, we can talk all we like about all these, you know, the multiple games going to a league season, but then the Champions League will come down to, well, especially last season, one of these intense, ridiculous nights where there's sudden death, basically.
Yeah, and all you need is something like Laporte does his hamstring against Southampton 2 weeks before, and you got Otamendi playing again, or Fernandinho is injured, and they decide they have to play Stones in defensive midfield or whatever. You know, there's so many things that can go wrong.
But, I mean, that's one of the things. And I would like to get into this with Guardiola yesterday, but it's a bit strange in a post-game press conference. It's one more for a pre-game press conference. But the whole Laporte Stones thing and how attuned they were to that being caught in the break, I do wonder how linked that is to also Guardiola mentioning after the Liverpool game, we now have to go away and think about why we've had these why we've had so many games where suddenly we suffer a 3-goal blitz or whatever it is, because it did. So I think that's almost the most interesting question.
Yeah, that is interesting. I think it's a combination of like. I think the reason that City concede like 3 goals in 10 minutes against Liverpool United last season is kind of as much psychological as it is technical. I think it's the team is bad, as good as it is, it's a bad team when it gets punched.
Mm.
Do we think Kyle Walker will be an option at centre back ever for Pep Guardiola?
Well, there have been times when he's played a more tucked in. He's played basically like the role he played for England. He has played that once or twice for City. Like, I remember when City famously beat Chelsea 1-0 at Stamford Bridge in like September of last season, and Walker played in that exact role
when they were playing in purple
on the right. Yeah, on the right of a back three.
De Bruyne.
So I think he could do that, and maybe this year last year he couldn't really do it that much because they didn't have Mendy. Whereas this year the presence of Mendy means that the team isn't so dependent on having width down the right, and therefore Guardiola might want to use Walker in that more England role because he can get forward a little bit and he can cover against the counter attack. He's so quick. I thought he was really good yesterday. He was so fast.
It's just that one kind of depth weakness that we talked about, you know, the fact that Douglas Luiz didn't get his work permit. So they're a tiny bit short in the backup to Fernandinho. Obviously, didn't get Jorginho. It was the guy they wanted.
Had they got Jorginho, we'd be talking about
disgusting team. Like, yeah. Then behind Laporte and Stones, who are the next two centre-backs? So you've got Kompany and Otamendi.
But it's a very different
team with those two.
Yeah, but still, they're useful, both backups and alternatives, like one of the most experienced defenders.
No, for sure. Like, I think they're really good.
The Fernandinho thing is like a big issue. Like, that will probably come and bite City at some point.
Yeah.
Delph, is it Delph next in line? Or?
Yeah, it could be Delph.
Or Stones.
Stones, maybe.
Gundogan,
I mean, can't really defend.
He can't do that, can he?
He's good at, like, Pep was talking about this the other day on Sky's really good like Premier League season preview program, talking about how like what he really likes about Gundogan is his nose for the goal, like breaking in the final third and like making a run and getting on the end of things. But he can't, like, he's not physically good enough to tackle, I don't think. Whereas Fernandinho's really good at everything basically, which is what makes him such
a bit of a wild tangent. But just when you mentioned about Pep and Gundogan there, I wonder how often that's happened where manager's been in a different league, spotted an opposition player, and for his next job has gone, I'm having that for my life, given how opposed they were.
Yeah, completely. Because I remember he was brilliant in that. No, sorry, I got my seasons wrong there. I was going to say 2013 Champions League final.
He was
really good.
Yeah,
but that obviously
he scored the penalty as well, didn't he?
Yeah. You know, bringing Fabregas in at Chelsea?
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, it's not really the same. But.
Unai Emery signing Matteo Guendouzi.
No, he saw him and he was like, I need that Lorient kid. Which you can read more about on Wednesday.
So for all you listeners who are still listening to the podcast, I'm doing a profile of Matteo Guendouzi after his Premier League debut the other day.
And it's as they say, it's a doozy.
Well, hey, that was actually probably the joke of the podcast, maybe better than Miguel's, things will only get better.
I was making a legitimate
let me say something nice about Miguel. Because he's like holding this football, and you've probably heard it on the microphone, he's been like throwing it from hand to hand over the course of the podcast. And that's actually really good because usually on the podcast he's on his phone because he's got something else to distract him with.
No, it isn't his phone. It's good.
It means that he's actually more tuned into the conversation, I think.
It's good for his motor skills to practice that as well, you know.
So when
the brain's developing, it's really
a real departure from in the old days when, you know, of podcasting, when you would deny them the football so they'd want it during the podcast. Doesn't work either.
If anyone wants to go on Jack Pitbrook's Instagram, they can see me doing a quality RDLS flick. With
promotion.
No, okay, my Instagram then.
It's on Miguel's unlocked Instagram.
With promotion of Miguel's Instagram, we can end this week's episode.
At
Miguel Delaney, the same as your Twitter
handle.
Yeah.
There is only one.
Johnny, do you have anything to add?
Is your Instagram locked?
My Instagram is locked, yeah. I mean, it's strictly friends and actually not even family, just friends.
Cricket. okay, thank you everyone for coming in today. Thank you, Jack. For your work. I will see you next Monday at the latest for Crystal Palace Liverpool. Johnny, you're at the cricket this week.
Mm-hmm.
Any of our listeners who do love cricket, just want a little Easter egg, what are your thoughts on the England-India series at the moment?
Very, very disappointing. You know, it's we were promised, and it all shaped up to be a classic series. And I thought India would really, really come to the party. And instead, England, a shower of shite, have found a team that's even more of a shower of shite than they are.
Are you allowed to say that?
And Miguel, what was your view on England and India so far? And thank you for joining us. And that has been the Indie Football Podcast. I've been Ed Mallion. Remember to rate, review and subscribe. And we will see you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.